Welcome back to B Squared Podcast. After a week off, we are back on the air. It is Monday, May 23rd as we record, and the Cubs still have the best record in baseball. He's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. Glad to have you along for the pod. And the Cubs at 29-13, Beto, have lost 7 of their last 11. The sky is falling. Fire everyone.
Yeah, they've been struggling. It's crazy that they still have the best record. At the end of the day, they've been playing like crap. I don't want to sugarcoat it. They're going to have stretches like this throughout the course of the season. They weren't going to win 130 games. And as irrationally angry as I get after some games, especially that Milwaukee series, that was brutal. At the end of the day, like you said, they're 29-13, the best record in the league. They have a significant lead over the two teams that people thought they were going to go neck and neck with, which they still could the rest of the season in Pittsburgh and St. Louis. They got three big ones coming up. And that team from the South, to use like a college football head coach sort of coach speak, yeah. A team from the South.
We're going to make this Woody and Bo.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going on this week. So hopefully the Cubs will start to play a little bit better. They ran into a buzzsaw in Madison Bumgarner last night since we recorded this podcast on Monday. What's the date? The 23rd.
Yeah.
The 23rd, and he was great. Kyle Hendricks was great. The Cubs can't get the Giants pitchers out at the plate, and that was the problem in the last two games of the series. But 29-13, 16 games over, it's hard to be too upset.
I want to ask you, because you alluded to this already, but how many times did you have irrational anger during this week? Because I can tell you right now that when Matt Cain hit the double, irrational anger.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's irrational anger. That might qualify as rational anger, because he's 0-46.
Yeah. Horrible.
Breaks that string with a double. John Lester was getting squeezed early on the ball game. Greg Gibson was awful.
He was, but you know what? I'm glad that you brought this up. I really like John Lester. I am in the John Lester fan club in terms of what he brings to a team, the type of player he is, and obviously, other than Saturday night, he has been outstanding. There's no question to that. But what bothers me about Lester, I don't feel that this is an unfair criticism, but you tell me if I'm wrong. What bothers me about Lester is, for a guy who has won a Game 5 in a World Series, for a guy that has won multiple World Series, for a guy that has pitched in some of the biggest games you could ever imagine pitching in and has succeeded in them, you can rattle him fairly easily, or at least more easily than he should be rattled. And you're right about Greg Gibson. He did not have a good game behind the plate on Saturday. I thought that strike three call that Lester did not get on Span changed the entire game in the first inning, right? Mm-hmm. Because then Span has a 10-pitch at bat, and it screws the whole game up. But that one pitch should not rattle a pitcher of John Lester's caliber. He's too good. He shouldn't be worried about this stuff. I mean, if this guy was a bottom rung, lower level type starting pitcher, okay, fine. I get it. That's why he's not great. But John Lester has been great for most of his career, so it surprises me that this stuff causes him to be so rattled and to melt down.
Yeah, sorry. Michael just beat the Monstars on a last-second putback. 78-77 final, watching Space Jam on Encore. But no, you're not entirely – I don't entirely disagree with that. Yeah, he gets rattled at times. The first base thing is overdone.
Right. I mean, I love Lester, but it's like, dude, you're John Lester. So what if he didn't get a strike three call?
He's not Clayton Kershaw, where he can just navigate out of everything. Like, he's got good stuff, but where he's at, he's just so good typically with his control – and knowing not how to approach a certain hitter. So if he's not getting calls, that's troublesome. He doesn't have the Arrieta or Chris Sale type stuff where he can still get people out of the zone as often as those guys can. So, and I agree. I just think he's human, and he was very flustered early on. He typically doesn't show his frustration to the umpires all that often, but I think that you're totally right. That changed the entire complexion of the game when he had that 10-pitch at bat to Span, and he wasn't getting calls later on and pitches that appeared to be in the strike zone. And later on in the game in the ninth, not that the Cubs were going to come back, but Zobrist gets a pitch at his ankles that's called a 3-0 strike, and that would have been ball four and brought the tying run up to the plate. It was just an ugly weekend, but we can nitpick, and The umpires, even last night, they blew that call with Javi Baez going out of the baseline on the top of the eighth. That would have put the tying run on base to lead off the eighth inning with the top of the order coming up. It's just been a rough week or two where just things haven't gone their way. What stood out to me more than anything is the bats have been really cold. And a lot of that you can attribute to the lack of clutch hitting or runners in scoring position, hitting with runners in scoring position. That's going to even out. The Cubs are going to eventually get some hits in those spots. But what were they, like 1-for-30 at some point, including 1-of-24 against the Brewers with runners in scoring position in that series? I mean, that's horrendous. Right. I mean, I think we could go 1-for-24.
Beto, I see you serving one the other way with runners in scoring position. That's what I'm seeing.
One out, just, you know, wait back on a breaker on another pitch and just dump one out in the right field.
Yes, that's what I'm seeing you doing. I'm probably striking out, but I'd be pitching in this scenario, not hitting. We all know that I can't hit, but...
That's crazy. Michael Jordan's landing back on with the Birmingham Barons right now to finish off Space Jam. He probably goes at least 2-3-for-24 in that spot.
Oh, that was basically his entire career with the White Sox minor league system.
Yeah.
But what you're saying, and I think you're right, is basically that the Cubs were 24-6. They're not playing 800 ball. They won't play 800 ball this season. And Anthony Rizzo even made a comment. He's like, if you thought we were going to win 140 games, I don't know what you're taking. And he's right. The bottom line is...
I want some of that, though, right?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Are you kidding? But
I can have that sort of optimism.
Yeah, right. But my point is that there are obviously going to be people who irrationally become angry because they've lost 7 of 11. They haven't played as well over the last 11 to 12 days, whatever. They are not going to play 800 ball all year. And baseball is a long season, and sometimes you go through stretches like this. And Theo Epstein even said it a couple of weeks back that the team will face adversity. The team will go through struggles. They will not win, every single game that they play. And you're starting to see that. Jason Hayward makes an incredible catch in right center field that was outrageously good and shows you how great of a defensive player he is. But he gets hurt, and... fortunately, it's only a few days, but the point is these things happen. Baseball is fluky. It's funny. And as great of a team as you might have, what's the saying, Beto? It's like every team wins 60 games and loses 60 games. It's what you do in the other 40. So even a great team is going to lose 60 games. So the Cubs have lost some games recently. I'm not overly concerned because I feel like it's more anomaly than anything else that Anthony Rizzo isn't hitting or that guys aren't coming through in the clutch.
Yeah, you're right. And it's good that we have kind of level heads about it. It's annoying.
If you and I are the rationality of the Cub fan base, I don't know if this is good for the Cub fan base. Can I just throw this out there?
Yeah, especially since we're not even a third. We're at the quarterway point of the season. There's a long way left to go. So I don't know how some people are going to survive the next 4 months.
Right.
However, you're right. To me, it's just annoying because I get emotionally attached and invested entirely too easily on this team. And there'll be games where I just will never get over that Milwaukee series. And at the end of it, if you have that macro sort of approach, does it really matter at the end of the season that they lost 2-3? We always go back to that Phillies series a year ago, and rightfully so, that they got swept by the Phillies at home. Cole Hamels throws the no hitter. It's the last time Jake Arrieta lost, and they still won 97 games. People were jumping off the bars on Clark Street rooftops when that happened, and it turned to not matter at all in the slightest. And I think when we go down the road in 2 to 3 months, we're going to look back at this stretch and probably think the same thing, that if this was maybe the NBA and you had a Golden State Warriors where usually talent wins almost on a night in and night out basis, if you show up and you can play 800, 900 basketball, you can't do that in baseball because of the amount of variance there are. Otherwise, you'd see teams winning 130 and 140 games when they're so much better than the rest. It's just not the case.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. I think, believe it or not, the Cubs have just played well against the Cardinals over the last couple of seasons. And I think this is a good opportunity for them to get the bats going against a Cardinals pitching staff who's been very disappointing this year.
They have been, and the Cardinals, and they're a plus 50 in run differential, but like you said, their pitching has not been very good. Adam Wainwright is throwing the opener for the Cardinals tonight, and he's been awful. I know that he had a good start recently, but his numbers are not good at all. And so we'll see what he has. Listen, Adam Wainwright has been really good for this Cardinal team for a long time, and he certainly had his good starts against the Cubs, so you can't take an opportunity to face him for granted. I think it's going to be a challenge for the Cubs tonight. But this kind of stuff happens. There are ebbs and flows in a baseball season. I do think that even though it is May 23rd, this is an important series for the Cubs, because one of the things that they have done extremely well so far this year with Beto is that they have crushed their division. They have crushed the NL Central, and they need to keep doing that. They're 16-5 against division teams, and teams that win the division by 8-10 games where you're not biting your nails until the final day of the season, that's what they do. That's how you do that. So I don't want to minimize the importance of these games, but fortunately, if you're going to lose games in the division, you're losing them, frankly, to Milwaukee, who doesn't matter. You need to beat St. Louis and you need to beat Pittsburgh, period.
Yeah, definitely. And you could say all you want that it's only May, and I get that. Nobody thinks this is September, so let's get that out of the way now. But these are important games in the standings. If you get swept in St. Louis, all of a sudden you're only up 4 games against the Cardinals, and you give them some sort of life. It's like, hey, we haven't peaked yet. St. Louis is thinking, we haven't peaked yet. The Cubs played outstanding, and we're only 4 games out with still plenty left to go. And same with Pittsburgh. They're only 6 back. So these games are important in the standings because they all do matter at the end of the day. And if you're the Cubs, you've set the pace in the National League Central Division. You've had a hefty lead early on. You don't want to give these teams behind you any sort of hope that they can catch you down the stretch. And how do you do that? You create some distance early on. They've done it so far. Hopefully they can do it in the next couple of months too.
So now as we look ahead, and you'll take a look at the Cubs' schedule, because we like to do this every week in our podcast, you take a look at where they are right now. They're going to take on St. Louis for the next 3 games. And then following this series against St. Louis, they take on Philadelphia at home, and then the Dodgers at home, and then they have Arizona at home. So I think that what's unfortunate about the timing of the Cubs starting to come back to earth a little bit is that they're going into a really tough stretch of games. You know, everyone said in April, Beto, that, well, the Cubs are this great team, but they haven't beaten anybody, but they did beat a lot of these good teams. I mean, they went to Pittsburgh and they played Washington and they won 7 in a row, and we know all that and whatever. So we know that they're battle-tested and they're really good. But now that they've lost 7 of 11, they really don't get a reprieve for a while, because you've got, like I mentioned, Philadelphia is a team that could certainly be had, but they're a lot better than a lot of us thought they would be, and they have young pitching. But when you have St. Louis, Philadelphia, Dodgers, Arizona, Philadelphia, Atlanta, which, you know, the Cubs couldn't beat before, that caused our rational anger, and then Washington and Pittsburgh and St. Louis again, I mean, that's a prolonged stretch of games for about the next month that's really going to show us what the Cubs are made of again.
Yeah, and we kind of thought that would be the case. We the first month of the year, nobody was fooling themselves and thinking that the Cubs didn't have the highest quality of opponent to begin the year until they began that stretch against Pittsburgh and Washington when they went 7-0. Yeah, St. Louis has been playing really good, and their bats can get really hot really fast. And that you look at that plus 50 run differential, and a lot of that is them not winning incrementally by 2 or 3 runs. They'll have a game when they get shut out 1-0, and then they'll have a game the next day where they win 13-6. That's just been what the Cardinals have been this year. They've been boom or bust at the plate. Philadelphia has been much better, where, yeah, at the end of the year, I don't think they're going to be able to sustain this. They're minus 31 in their run differential. They've won, like 15 one-run games. But for the time being, they're winning baseball games. So they're still in that, quote-unquote, even if it is a lucky stretch, they're still in that. So they're a much better team, at least to this point of the season, than people anticipated. And then you got, obviously, next week, the two teams in the West that are capable of shutting you down on the mound. I know Greinke and Miller haven't been very good for Arizona, but they can figure it out anytime. Dodgers have great pitching, too. So we'll see where this week and next couple of weeks take us, because last time we talked was 2 weeks ago. We were beginning these stretch against teams that we thought the Cubs would be able to handle. They didn't do so against teams such as San Diego and Milwaukee. The San Diego doubleheader was where the irrational anger count hit an all-time high for the year. I will say that. And
well, okay, so Let's go top five irrational moments of the Cubs season so far. So is San Diego number one?
I think the night game, of course I was there. The Cubs had played 33 games to that point of the season. I had not been to one game. That was my first game. I go to the worst possible game. There's a 3% chance. I figured this out. There's a 3% chance that I could go out of one game. I could go to the worst game of the season. And I went to it, and that was it. They could lose 1-0. John Lackey gets all John Lackey and plays baseball police after the game, saying that, oh, remember that the Betancourt hit the home run.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God. And that would be number
but
one.
But then he shined his really pearly white teeth at Betancourt, and he blinded him. So.
Yeah, exactly. He'll never hit off him again. Yeah. He blinded me, too.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't believe you would say that. Oh, but look at those pearly whites.
Yes.
Oh, look at those chompers. We're all good now.
Yes.
I would say that's one. I think the Brewers game, the first game would be another one. And then the Braves game was irrational anger too when they lost in extra innings against the Braves.
Yeah.
I think those are my top three right now, with San Diego and then maybe other San Diego game. The first day of that doubleheader when they had a 2-run lead late and you just sort of chalked this one up as a win. And if they would have won that game, they would have went 20 games over 500. I'm like, oh my gosh, this team's going to be 26-6. At one point, and then they lose and get swept. So those are the ones that stand out for me in my irrational anger losses of the season.
I think that first Padres game, even though I would have been irrationally angry otherwise, the fact that they had won so many in a row going into that, it didn't bother me as much that they lost, because I figured, well, it's a makeup game. Hendricks started. You couldn't imagine that they were going to just keep winning and winning and winning. At some point, they're going to lose a game. I agree with your thought, but I thought because of the timing of it, I wasn't irrationally angry over that.
So you were actually logical in your thinking.
I was logical. The second game, though, I was irrationally angry. That Lackey bet. I mean, first Betancourt launches that home run 600 feet. That was like the Glenn Allen Hill shot. Okay, then and the Cubs
gotta be the shoes.
Right. Then they don't even get a run. And you don't get one bleeping run in that game. That was horrible.
Yes. Yeah, so I was at a rooftop and Soler strikes out for the 700th time of the game.
Oh.
And the bases were loaded in the eighth inning. I was almost off that rooftop. Right. This is May 11th or whatever, and I was ready to jump off the rooftop. It was unbelievable.
Okay, so I had another one of those moments last night in the first inning. I wasn't watching. I was listening in the car. Deanna and I were on our way to an event last night. And I'm saying to her in the car, like, I'm always analyzing the game like she cares, but whatever. So I say to her, you know, if we don't score right here, they might not score tonight, because this is what happens against a great pitcher. If you don't get them in the first inning, you might not get them.
100%.
And so Soler miraculously walks, because I'm saying, oh, well, this is the strikeout to end the inning. I mean, I have already gotten to irrational Soler status. Like I did with Soriano.
It's actually been better the last couple. He's been better.
No, he had a good game Friday. Congratulations. He's had a lot of big strikeouts. So, yeah. So I say to her, okay, Russell's up. He's been clutch. We actually have a shot to score a couple in the first. When he strikes out, I almost slammed my head into the steering wheel. I was so mad.
Because this is what I'm talking about.
Right,
this
because you knew, Beto, you knew that when they didn't score in the first, they weren't scoring, right? I was like, they're not scoring tonight.
So the next five innings, my goal watching the game was like, all right, let's not score here. Let's make them throw seven pitches per at bat so we have them out of there by the sixth inning.
Yes.
Hopefully we're scoreless, and then we can get one off the Giants bullpen. That was my thought process as well.
Yes.
Because Addison Russell, who's been great this year, they were talking about how much his strikeout rate's been down. And then he goes in and strikes out pretty much every at bat.
He had the sombrero last night, right? Didn't he have the golden sombrero? Yeah.
Struck out four. He also did the same thing, I think, against the Brewers later last week. He had four strikeouts. And I don't want to crush him. He's been outstanding on both sides.
I'm a big fan of Addie Russell. It's just that I was so mad, because that's what Bumgarner's going to do. I was also sort of irrationally mad at Lester when he gave up the two-run homer to Buster Posey on Saturday, because I thought – they're facing Bumgarner tomorrow. There's no way that they're going to beat him. So they got to beat Matt Cain, who stinks, and they couldn't beat him. So
that was frustrating because Matt Kane didn't even pitch good. I think I tweeted this. Like, I don't even think he was good. The Cubs just didn't hit him. Bumgarner was great last night.
Right. I thought Matt Kane was all over the place in the first few innings. The Cubs, for whatever reason, did not have the greatest plate approach in that game Saturday, and they let him off the hook, and then that was it.
Yes.
So I was frustrated at that. It's funny because we have such first world problems. We're spending this podcast complaining about a 29-13 baseball team. But
I do pick them apart.
Right. But the I think the other game.
Well, what's going on with rookie OTAs?
Oh, God. That, I mean, you want to put me to sleep. Forget the 3:45 wake up calls.
Yeah.
Start talking Bears OTAs. I'm gone.
There's rookie mini camp. Forget about it. I want to know what Cody Whitehair, how many pancakes. Yeah.
How's our buddy Daniel Braverman doing at Bears rookie minicamp? L'chaim. Anyway,
DeAndre Hall, former Northern Iowa Panthers. How many passes he had deflected?
Yeah,
right. I don't want to talk about a 29-13 team. Forget it.
Right. But I think that the other game where I got irrationally angry was that Rockies game when they couldn't hit Tyler Chatwood. Because I was there, and we had great seats. And I figures, I'm at the game where they can't hit Tyler Chatwood.
Who's actually been good now.
He is good. And there's in retrospect, there's nothing wrong with the fact that they couldn't hit Tyler Chatwood for a game. But I was furious at that time that they were losing to him.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was the Sunday game, right? The finale?
Yes.
That
was Sunday afternoon game. Lester was excellent, and he just got beaten by Tyler Chatwood.
That's right. And Lester's had a few of those games where he's awesome. He had 6 2/3, no hitter going on, and lost that game.
But I will say this for Lester. Lester's start on Saturday was the shortest start of the season for the Cubs, which shows you how incredible their pitching has been this year, right? I mean, if we're going to joke about the irrational bad stuff that has happened over the course of what's been a mostly extremely dominant season for the Cubs, their pitching has been so unbelievable. And we talk about the run differential, but that's the point of the run differential, that they're allowing the fewest runs in the game, and their pitching has been so good that it took until May 21st for a pitcher to go 2 2/3 and get bombed out of the game early. Right?
Yeah, that's what's so cool about this team, and this takes us back to the argument, every team wins 60 and loses 60. The reason is because pitchers certain days just don't have it for whatever reason. You look at some of the elite and premier pitchers, and they don't have them as frequently. But you get down to those 3, 4, 5 spots in the rotation, and there's going to be starts throughout the year where they just have nothing, and they just get lit up, and things don't go their way. And that's why it's been such an anomaly that just hasn't happened up until this point. I think it was September of last year when Jason Hamill was second half Jason Hamill, and it lit them out on the fire in the first inning, and that was the last time they hadn't had at least a 5-inning start.
Right.
That's just a remarkable stretch. 5 innings every time where they went out there, they were prepared to pitch, and you knew that wasn't going to last all season. It was just unfortunate that it happened on Saturday against Matt Kane when they couldn't hit him either. So that was frustrating for me. And you were joking about Madison Bumgarner, and you were rationally angry in the first inning last night when Russell struck out, and you're like, they're not going to score. Well, coincidentally, in the fifth inning, when Bumgarner had that RBI double off of Hendricks, my first thought, I just turned to Sarah and I just go, ball game. That's how ridiculous I am. This is a team that's 17 games over 500 at the time. They give up one run in the fifth inning, and I'm like, this game's over.
Right, right. Well, you know what happened to me on Saturday?
It's so stupid.
So we're cooking dinner Saturday night, and we were going to get ready to go out. And when the Cubs went, once Lester gave up the homer, I was watching a few more innings. And then I went on Twitter, which is always a mistake. And people are tweeting about the NBA game. And so I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to turn this on. That is probably more interesting than watching the Cubs lose. So I waited a little while, and then I turned on the Cavs Raptors game to watch LeBron James flop all over the court.
Oh my God.
That was,
don't even get me started. I know.
Yeah. That was absurd. I actually started laughing. That was pretty hilarious, to be honest with you. But so then I've got the NBA game on, and I'm not really watching the late innings of the Cub game, 'cause I'm like, it's over. It doesn't matter. Then a notification pops up on my phone that they scored another run, And now I'm like, okay, well, I have to turn it back. So I turned it back, and then I see them score the third run, and then I watched them lose, and then I got irrationally angry again. Because I was like, why did I turn it back on just to see what was inevitably going to be a loss?
They always, even the ninth inning, every single game, and it's cool to see that
such a commentary on how good they are that never let up.
It's never just this ho-hum ninth inning. You go back to the two games they lost to Milwaukee. Both those games, they had an opportunity to tie it.
Yes.
That's why I was mad when Zobrist got called on that strike one on a 3-0 pitch on Saturday night. That would have brought Soler to the plate as the tying run after Fowler homered to lead off the inning. Even last night, I know they went 1-2-3, but Zobrist was very, very close. If that ball drops, that's a three-bagger.
Yep.
So he would have been on third base with nobody out to begin the inning. So there's always some sort of drama, and it's great, and you're right, it is a market how good they are, but it is frustrating when they have that patented Cubs tease and fake rally when they don't come back and win. It's like you had made your peace with the fact that they were going to lose. It's like, all right, you know, they can't win them all, and then they suck you back in, and then they do end up losing, and then you're pissed off.
Oh. It couldn't have been said any better, honestly. Yeah. It's just so – I get – what's happened to us now, bottom line, is that the Cubs are so good that we expect them to win every single game that they play, and then when they don't win, it causes our irrational anger. And it's so different, I think – than last year, because last year I didn't have expectations for them. And I sort of felt like as the season was going on, it was just such a joyride because it was like you have all these kids on the team, all these rookies that you and I have been following closely for a while, but I don't think the average fan has been following, you know, the minor league stats closely. And all of a sudden they're on the major league team and the Cubs are incredibly likable and they're winning and they're fun. And Jake Arrieta is becoming a superhuman cyborg of pitching excellence. And it's like, wow, this team is incredible. This is so much fun. You weren't as angry about the losses because I don't think you were expecting the wins every single day. Like when they swept that Giants series a year ago, I thought, this is unbelievable. They're really actually good. Hashtag we are good. Here we go. This year, because of the start they got off to, and they deserve all the credit in the world for 24-6, it's incredible. But it's almost to their detriment now because when you start out that good and you set the standard that high, you lose a game and it's like, this team is the worst, fire everyone. Right?
No, for sure. And you can equate last year to playing with house money. I was the same way. When they lost, everything was a bonus after that point because they
although
were...
Although I still have a rational hatred towards Daniel Murphy. That is not
definitely. Yeah. No, I think that's rational. We don't have to.
That's rational.
Very logical thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. But this year, you're right, because of how last year went and the expectations going into this year, and then the start they get out to, it creates a crazy precedent that we've never seen as Cubs fans in our lifetime. So you're gonna get emotionally attached and angry after every single loss that happens, and there hasn't been many of them. They've only lost 13 games, 2/3 of the way through May. That's absurd. And I have to say this out loud, so the next time they do lose a game, I don't, you know, want to jump into a burning building or something like that. I tried to think of something different than jump off a rooftop because I've jumped off of like 7 rooftops during this podcast already.
You have.
Collectively, there's a lot of roof. I've jumped off of half the rooftops in Chicago at this point. But you know what I mean. It's weird to have this sort of mindset where you get mad after a loss because they've been so infrequent, and it's a great problem to have. And hopefully, we can continue to make it a great problem to have as the next couple of weeks roll on.
Right. I mean, what's amazing about the Cubs is that if they played. Let's say they play 650 baseball for the year, which would be incredible, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'd win 105 games. They're playing 690 baseball right now. So
after going 4-7.
After going 4-7. So it's hard to be that mad about any game. It's just that when you play the best teams. Now, I get it. I don't like it. And I liked what Joe Maddon said after the Brewers series. And I don't think it's acceptable. But I get it from a human nature standpoint that sometimes a team as good as the Cubs is going to let down for a game against a bad team. So I would give them a game to lose to Milwaukee, but losing the series, that was annoying. And then to lose the series to the Giants is understandable because the Giants are good, but typically the Cubs have risen to the occasion against the good teams. They weren't able to this weekend. I will say this. I'm not just saying this because the Cubs swept the Nationals. I am much more impressed with the Giants than I am the Nationals. I think the Giants have, because they're playing in San Francisco, people give them less credit. But the top of the rotation is excellent. The biggest problem for the Giants is their fourth and fifth starters, which inevitably Brian Sabian is going to have to add a starting pitcher.
And they're
going to. But offensively, they don't have the names as much, although Posey is obviously incredible, three-time World Series champ and MVP and all this stuff. But they don't always have the names, but they have sneaky, really good players. And Crawford is tremendous. Duffy is really good. I mean, Pagan has been very solid for them. You look up and down that lineup, there's no easy out on the Giants.
That's a great way to put it. I was going to say that. They're a very resilient bunch at the plate, much like the Cubs are. They don't have the pop in the middle of the order, like the home run pop that the Cubs do, but they're exhausting for an opposing pitcher. And you saw that firsthand, even with John Lester early on, whose pitch count was way up. Denard Span is a great addition of that team. He's a guy that's, he's not going to hit for a lot of power, but that's just not him. However, for a guy that doesn't hit for a lot of power, he's still able to coax a decent amount of walks because he lays off pitches right on the border that are off the strike zone. He fouls off a lot of tough pitches, and he's much like Dexter Fowler into the fact that you lead off a game and he's going to have these 7 to 10 pitch at bats, and you keep going down the line of Panic after that's a guy that's going to work.
By the way, I was wondering all weekend if Joe Panic is a brother of Blackhawks forward Richard Panik.
They just have to pronounce it different just based on the sports that they play.
Yes.
It's like, well, you know, you can't just, if you're hockey and your last name is spelled like that, it's got to have a little bit more of a twist to make it more believable, right?
Yes. I mean, it had to be Panik. I mean, in hockey, although I was really starting to Panik in game 7 when the Blackhawks gave up that third goal.
You just went there, didn't you?
Yeah. You know, I was going there. Let's be honest.
That's true.
Yeah.
The baseball one, the Panic guy, is pretty good over at second base. Their infield's outstanding. Brandon Belt's having a great year. You're right. They're very good. They're very resilient at the plate. Their top of the rotation's great. Their bullpen's pretty good. It's not as good as maybe as it was during their World Series runs. I would agree that as of right now, the Giants would be a scarier team than Washington based on Washington's, I guess, lack of offense outside of Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy. It's early on. The Mets, just with that pitching staff, is a lot of fun to watch if their arms don't fall off like Wooden Pryor's did in 04. The Giants, though, they're a fun team. They're going to be a good team all year. They're playing great baseball. I think they've won 9 of 10. They'd won 7 in a row before Arrieta beat them. And the Dodgers are scuffling a little bit. The Diamondbacks have been disappointing so far. The Rockies have been somewhat of a surprise. I don't think they would test the Giants. And then the Padres are terrible, unless they're playing the Cubs in a doubleheader on a Wednesday, and they're great.
And you're there.
And then I'm there. It's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. I think the Giants are a lot of fun. I did want to ask you before we wrap up here, on Saturday night – or Friday night, excuse me, the first batter of the game in the bottom of the first, Jason Hayward, you referenced earlier, unbelievable play.
Yeah.
Maybe the best play we'll see from a Cubs player all season long. Were you just instantly going back to your Cubs roots, thinking the absolute worst right away, saying, all right, he's out for the season? Because I was. I turned to Sarah and said, that's it. He's done. Forget it. It's over. Go on.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm like, well, you know, I thought it was like a collarbone thing. And then I wasn't. And then it was like a shoulder, because it looked like he grabbed his right side, but then they were walking him off with his left arm.
Yeah.
So I thought it was just everything under the sun that could have been wrong with him went wrong after a great play. I felt the same way I sort of did after Schwarber. I know that was more of an ACL. It was a bad worst case scenario than whatever Hayward had going on. But I was like, minimum 2 months, this guy's going to be out. I couldn't believe when they got the good news.
Right. So I was, when I found out about it, because we were going to come home and watch the game, but you know that 9:15 is a little bit late for me since I'm on a 90-year-old man's schedule. So we were out for dinner on Friday night, and then we got into a cab to come home, and I went on my Twitter to see if the game had started, and all of these tweets are coming in about Jason Hayward, falling to make the catch and crashing into the wall. And all of a sudden I get very quiet. And Deanna turns to me and she goes, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I think Jason Hayward might be badly hurt. I'm not sure.
He's dead.
I don't." Right. I was like, "I don't want to talk about it." And so she said, "Well, what does it say?" And I said, "Well, he crashed into the fence and he made the catch, but he had to be helped off the field." So I hadn't seen it yet. So now in my mind, yes, I'm thinking, figures, this Cubs team would get off to an incredible start this year. They would lose Hayward and Schwarber, and then they have no outfielders, and then are they going to go trade for one, and then they're going to deplete the farm system to trade for one. And now
the domino effect was
So now I'm like halfway through the destruction of the entire organization, where I finally get home, and I turn on, you know, I go back on the social media to see what's going on. Nobody has anything. So I go in to do the show with Bruce the next morning, and we're talking about, do the Cubs have to go trade for an outfielder? And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to send a release out. He's out for the year.
That's what I was
torn
waiting.
Upside. I don't know what it is. And when I got that news, it was like a giant gorilla had been lifted off my shoulders. It was such a relief. And I'll say this, for all the people that were saying, and I know that you're going to agree with me on this, there were so many people that are like, well, Jason Hayward isn't hitting anyway, so they could live. No, 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 no. Jason Hayward has not hit. You're right. He is starting to hit. He has not hit. For the most part, he's been disappointing offensively. But if you lost him defensively, you would feel that. You would feel that the day that he is out of the lineup. And I think that the Cubs can weather it for 3 to 5 days. But if he were out for a month or 2 months or 3 months, the Cubs would feel that. It's one thing when you lose a hitter in a lineup that is so good that you can withstand some offensive deficiencies, but this is not a great defensive team without Jason Hayward. It's not. He is going to save you a lot of runs, and the fact that he's out there or will be out there in a few days is critically important. So this idea that because Hayward hasn't hit as well that they could be fine without him, I think is insane.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll make one amendment. I'll say that they're not a great defensive outfield. They're a bad defensive outfield without him out there.
They would be awful. Yeah, I mean, then you're if Hayward's not out there, you're talking about, what's your outfield then? Fowler, Soler, and Caesar?
Yeah, they throw. I mean, Caesar's okay, and but he's not going to play.
But you could play Bryant.
Zobrist, they've tried him out there.
Zobrist.
Bryant's out there. Yeah. I mean, you're losing just a ton of defense out there, and he's going to hit eventually. And I know there people are trying to dissect, and that's part of it. You know, that's what you do as fans and on Twitter and in the media. You try to figure out what the problem is, and people are talking about how his hands aren't quiet before he hits and how much smoother he was last year, and Cubs messed with him, and we'll figure it out. I know he's had a glorified
Fire Madden
bad start to the beginning of the season. Yeah. Offensively, he's always been a pretty slow starter. This year magnified even more so, not only because of the contract, but because his numbers are even worse than they typically are. He's still going to hit. He's going to be fine. You would feel it, like you said, immediately from a run prevention standpoint. So even how angry I was on Saturday night when they Kane gets the double and I was just annoyed in general, it felt like a cushion blow because we knew that Hayward it was going to be okay. It's opposite of Friday night, even though they won handily with Jake Arrieta on the mound, I didn't even feel that good about it because I thought Hayward would be out for a significant period of time.
Oh, yeah.
So it almost felt like Saturday was a win based on the fact that he's only going to miss maybe this Cardinals series, which I'm sure they're not excited about because they don't have the chance to boo him down there now. They'll be more excited when he's going to be back, hopefully at home this weekend against Philadelphia.
All right, so now for the extremely exciting portion of our podcast where we predict what will happen for the upcoming week. Now, you and I amazingly, prophetically predicted the 7-0 winning streak against the Pirates and Nationals. Now you have the Cardinals for 3 and then the Phillies for 3, if I'm not mistaken, or is that 4?
I think they're off Thursday. I think it's a 3 game.
Here, I'm looking right now. This is really good radio podcasting. Yes, they are off Thursday. So there's 6 games this week.
Added us.
Yes. So there's 6 games. Cardinals for 3, Phillies for 3. Brian Beto, what will the Cubs do?
There's a 0% chance the Cubs will lose a game this week at the end of the day. 0% chance. They're going, we need the karma, because when we predicted that 7-0, we take at least a little bit of responsibility for that 7-game winning streak during the course of that week. So let's get back to our roots, to where we were a few weeks ago. I'm going 6-0, a sweep in St. Louis, starting on the right foot against Adam Wainwright in St. Louis tonight. Then the Phillies come back down to earth when they visit Wrigley Field. It'll be payback for last July in Cole Hamels.
Payback.
They've been circling this one on the schedules ever since they came back out in the fall.
The unfortunate thing is that Arrieta is going to miss the Phillies. That was his last loss. He's got to get back out there against them.
I love how we're like, gosh, it's a bummer that he has to face the Cardinals and he can't face the Phillies.
We're complete idiots.
I know.
I'm going with 4-2. They're going to win both series. I know that's boring.
That's
but
so boring. You just pick all the one seeds in your March Madness bracket and Syracuse next year too.
If I did, I would do way better than I normally do.
That's true. Same here.
That's a problem. I'm always like, oh, this upset's happening. My dad is a classic case of that.
Mr. Chalk.
Oh no, he picks every upset because it's all vivid case theory. It's like he remembers every upset that's ever happened. So then he just assumes that they always happen. I'm like, Dad, the reason why they're covered is because there's one. If they happened every time, then it wouldn't be a big deal.
He's like, well, you know, Valpo's playing and Bryce Drew had a game winner 20 years ago against the 13 or against the 4 seed. So maybe I'll pick Valpo this trip, right?
So he is done in the first round every year because he picks like 6 upsets that don't happen.
Yeah, Sarah had Stony Brook going to the Final Four. She really thought they were going to make a run against Kentucky, Indiana, and North Carolina.
Hey,
back-to-back.
Love me some Stony Brook. Great pick. I love Sarah's thought process there.
Yeah.
Why did she pick Stony Brook, by the way? Did you have a friend that went there? Or
no, I guarantee it's a strict, because I would have made fun of her if she picks all chalk, if she went all in the 4 number ones.
Yeah,
and she's like, well, you know, they're supposed to win, so she get there. So I think she tried to do the whole, all right, I'm gonna pick a team that has a cool name. Stony Brook is a pretty cool name, and just gonna be different than everyone else. She had maybe a little bit of an ill advised choice is the way I'll try to phrase it.
You're a nice husband for saying the ill advised choice to take Stony Brook to win the whole thing.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
No, that was the non-strike 3 call on Saturday for John Lester. That was the worst thing ever in my life. But anyway, fun stuff. We hope that you will follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Brian Beto. I am at Jordan Burnfield. You can also get us on iTunes. And so if you go to iTunes and you search for the B-Squared Podcast, you will find us there. You can also find us on Podomatic, where our website, our podcast originates. And Beto, tell them about the Facebook page.
Oh, the one that I forgot to post the last podcast on? Yeah, I'll talk.
It was a stellar job.
You can search the B Squared Show on Facebook. It goes back to our roots when we did a show every day in 2010. We still have the page, so I'll try to post it all on the, I can't promise because obviously I failed at that miserably already. But I will try to post the link to the most recent podcast each and every week, and you can like us on there. And if we, you know, do eventually have guests and things like that, we'll be sure to promote it that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Beto, great talking to you, and we will talk again next week for the breakdown of the 6-0 week for the Chicago Cubs.
Go Cubs, go on 6-7-0.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to the B Squared Podcast.